This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
To kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you are online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello, and welcome to Open Eyes. So before beginning tonight, I wanted to give a thanks to all of you guys who have been listening so far. I really appreciate all the wonderful feedback that I've been getting. It's been an interesting journey so far, and I'm really grateful for all of you guys out there who have been listening. Tonight, I have an interview on tap for you guys with Maggie G, also known as Maggie Hart. She's been on the Late Night in the Midlands Network a few times now, and I really wanted to have a conversation with her myself because I connected up really well with her. We've had a lot of personal conversations together, and I just had to bring her aboard my show. There was just no getting around it. Normally, I would talk about different news items that I've run across here during this section of the show, but there's one bit of news that's been hovering over everybody's heads at this point. I really have to talk about it. So I'm sure that you guys are aware by now of the whole Paris terrorist attack that has gone on. It happened on Wednesday. Well, the mainstream media is trying to play it like it was a terrorist attack. They are trying to claim that it was three terrorists that killed a bunch of people, allegedly for them displaying images of Muhammad in obscene ways or just even giving the images of Muhammad out. And apparently that makes people flip their wig. I've talked before about some of the religious extremists, and I'm definitely going to talk about them again at some point in time because this is really important. The world right now is on fire because of extremism in one way, shape, or form. Unfortunately, in this case, in this whole Paris attack, this is not the case. There is proof, and I mean irrefutable proof, that this whole thing was designed from the get-go to be a false flag attack. And I'm not just throwing that word around. I know a lot of people out there say, oh, false flag about every little thing that ends up occurring. I'm not one of the types of people to do that. I look at everything very skeptically, very critically before I jump into a decision about something. In this case, I have looked very critically at everything that's been going on so far. And I have got to say, without a doubt, 100% proof that this whole business was faked from the get-go. If you want to go to my website at openeyesnetwork.com, and in particular to the show notes for this show, which will be at openeyesnetwork.com/OE056, I will have a link to a video that shows one of the alleged attackers shooting what appears to be a police officer, you know, a French police officer, basically in the head. With his gigantic rifle. And you can see in this video, this is a video that was, if I remember correctly, on CNN. It was originally aired there. The same video they now blur out and say it's because it's got graphic content in it. So they blur out everything. But they did this because it is now being... It is now coming out that this in particular shows the fakeness of everything that has happened there. In the video, you can see, like I said, this quote unquote terrorist coming in and coming in from the left side of the screen. And he's kind of jogging around carrying this huge weapon, dressed all in black and blah, blah, blah. And this police officer is sort of laying on the ground on his left side, propped up on his elbow. And the terrorist fires his gun at the guy's head. And you see a muzzle flash and smoke. And the cop sort of slowly drifts downward. Okay. I really recommend that you go watch the video after this show has been aired, because this shows you that this whole thing was faked. When the terrorist shoots the gun, there is no recoil on the gun whatsoever. There is no blood from the victim whatsoever. If he was shot in the head, he would have been spattered everywhere. I mean, look at, for example, the JFK assassination. This was allegedly a bullet that was fired from a long range away and is a smaller caliber bullet than what is being fired by these terrorists. And his head explodes. I mean, there is debris and mess everywhere. Okay. If you look at this video that I'm talking about here, there is nothing. Nothing. No debris, no damage, no blood, no anything. The guy doesn't even have a recoil from the rifle, which is physically impossible. With a rifle of the size that this guy is carrying, if he had actually fired a shot that was a real bullet coming from that gun, the recoil on that thing would be crazy. I don't care how well trained somebody is. I don't care how strong somebody is. If you fire a rifle of the size that this guy is carrying, you're going to have kickback, and it's going to be seen in the video. Okay? There is no kickback whatsoever. You hear a gunshot, but you don't see any kickback or any muzzle flash or smoke coming from the weapon itself. You do see muzzle flash and smoke. However, it's coming from the hand of the victim, and it is going at a 90 degree angle away from the muzzle of the rifle. Physics declares that this is impossible. Okay, you can't fire a gun and have the muzzle flash and the smoke being fired from it at a right angle. It's impossible. I'm sorry, but show me the science where this type of thing can happen. Okay, it does not occur. So whatever it is that made that muzzle flash type of a look and made the smoke as if it was a gun shot was coming from the hand of the man laying on the ground. It's from his hand. And he's not holding a gun. You can see his hand. He's not holding a gun. So whatever it is that he had in his hand right there was what made the muzzle flash and the smoke fire out. Okay. This is called special effects. They do this in movies. Okay. This is a movie special effect. This was faked. 100%. There has been also information coming out saying that the 18-year-old who was allegedly part of this terrorist plot, you know, that there were three terrorists involved, and one of them is an 18-year-old who apparently has already surrendered to the police. I'm calling bull on this, right? He's apparently already surrendered to the police. Well, on Twitter, for instance, people were coming out saying that it's impossible that he was the one that was involved with it because he was at school with them at the time of the whole incident happening. I mean, how much more proof do we need to be able to call bullcrap on this? How much more proof do the masses out there need to see or to hear before they start waking up and realizing, hey, maybe something isn't correct here. Something feels a little off here. Something doesn't feel quite right here. Now, I'm not saying that there are not issues with Islamic extremists, just like there's issues with Christian extremists and all the other religions that are out there. You know, I talked about that on my episode on Monday, January 2nd here. And you can go back into my archives on my website and listen to that episode to hear some of the problems that are happening as far as the extremism is concerned in the world right now. Okay. But my point is that with all of this stuff that is occurring, okay, I'm not saying that there aren't issues as far as religious extremism is concerned. There are a lot of issues with it. But what is going on right now with this is inflaming all of that stuff even more. And the basic reason why it is occurring, and I'm going to hit you guys with this. On Wednesday, I did my episode regarding that I had Joe Long on as a guest with. It was regarding sexual education and some of the issues as far as sexual slavery and all of that stuff is concerned. That episode got hit really hard as far as the stream was concerned. You know, I mean, there were minutes that were cut out of that episode that people did not hear. Okay. And you can go to my website again and listen to the whole episode that's not interrupted if you so desire. On that same day that this terrorist attack ended up happening, and I'm using air quotes here, right? On the same day that this attack ended up happening, the royal family came out and said that the issues as far as the allegations against Prince Albert are concerned, or I'm sorry, Prince Andrew are concerned, is a matter of national security. Because there is such a depth to the pedophile ring that's going on with these people as far as this royal bloodline is concerned, the major politicians. I mean, you can't get involved in politics. This has been proven. You can't get involved in politics these days without being blackmailed in some way. And the biggest form of blackmail that they use is sexual blackmail. It's the biggest blackmail that they can use is sexual blackmail. It's easy for people to fall into that trap. So they use it a lot. These sex rings are going on. Regardless of whether or not you like to think about that or not, and whether or not you believe it or not, is irrelevant. They are happening. So on the same day that the royals come out and say, oh, well, this stuff with Prince Andrew is a matter of national security. Oh, look, here's a terrorist attack in Paris. Let's not talk about the gates that are opening wide in this pedophile ring that's going on and in this sexual slavery ring that's going on. Let's not let these gates get opened wide to be able to save these children from this horrific life that they are in, to be able to rescue some of these children from this abject slavery and hell on earth that they are living. I mean, some of these children are being abused sexually in every way that you can imagine, and other ways that you couldn't. They are being eaten. They're being sacrificed, on and on and on. Okay. All of this stuff was starting to get blown open because of Prince Andrew. He was the gatekeeper to it all. Okay. You can think of him as the gatekeeper to all of the stuff that's going on behind it. So if his information had been blown open, everything gets blown open. And everything begins to fall apart as far as these royals are concerned. And that includes the politicians. They're all royalty. And now that this terrorist attack is going on, everything has been closed down. You're not hearing a word about it anymore. It's just like 9/11 with the attack that ended up occurring there, the false flag that occurred there. It's just like that. The day before 9/11 ended up occurring, Donald Rumsfeld comes out and says, oh, well, there's $2.3 trillion missing out of the Pentagon. We don't know what happened to it. Next day, boom, 9/11 ends up happening. Nobody's talking about it anymore. That's exactly what's happening here. The royals have used this as a method to shut down everybody from talking about their dirty laundry. So guys, I would love to cover this topic a lot more, but unfortunately I'm limited to time because I have this interview with Maggie coming up. I am going to speak about this a lot more on Monday, January 12th on my episode that I'm going to air. Be sure to tune in for it. It'll start at 7 o'clock PM Eastern Standard Time. Make sure you tune in for it because there is a lot of stuff that needs to be talked about with this. And I could literally go on for the whole 2-hour show about it. Okay, so guys, I'm going to be right back after this break. This is going to be a very short break. It's probably only going to be about 3 minutes, just to warn you. We're going to have Maggie G on this interview. She is a clairvoyant. She is a psychic. She has been contacted by angels. She is a great person to talk to, and she is going to be here on Open Eyes in just a few minutes. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Fear. Why aren't you afraid? Fear it all.
You are not afraid. There must be something wrong with you. You're a conspiracy theorist.
Here, have some drugs. You're laughing too much.
Here, we have this drug developed that actually stops you from laughing.
Oh, there's side effects?
Well, here, have some more drugs to counter those side effects. Now, don't worry, that side effect drug itself might kill you or make you bleed from your anus,
but that's okay. Now you're normal.
Now you're conforming. Good little minion. You will do well in the new world that we're creating. Oh, you don't like that thought? Here, have some more. Oh, this one is waking up a little bit. Here, watch Nicki Minaj's new Anaconda video. It's totally original except for all of the parts that have been rehashed from other songs from before. Watch the video. She's shaking her butt. Isn't that enticing? Oh, now you can join the other 250 million people that have watched this video in the past 2 weeks since it was released. Do you see they love to distract, to pull you away from the deeper thoughts, from the things that they know would end them in a heartbeat? They don't want us to know these things. They've been doing it to us since the beginning.
And thank you for hanging out through the commercial. You are, again, listening to Open Eyes. My name is Ira Robinson, and tonight we are doing an interview with somebody that I consider to be absolutely wonderful. I have been looking forward to this conversation for a really long time. Her name is Maggie Hart. Maggie, are you there?
I am. Hello, Ira. How are you?
I am doing really well tonight. Thank you. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Before we get too in-depth into what you do and all of that good stuff, how about telling the people a little bit about yourself in your own words and, like, where you're coming from, what you're all about, and that sort of thing?
Okay, sure. Well, I was born with what is typically called gifts. I was aware of my gifts from a very small age. You know, I saw things that shadows and things like that, and things that ordinary people didn't appear to see. I have two grandmas, one on each side, that were born gifted, one from Italy, who was very respected in her village, considered somewhat of a strega, I guess you'd call it. She would help people and heal people and do tea leaves and readings and things like that. And on the other side, on the Celtic side, I also had a grandma who was born with an extra flap of skin on her forehead, a jutting from the top of her forehead across the width of her forehead, and that was called a brow. And in her village also, she was very respected for her gifts. However, because of the fact that she was a woman, and in Ireland, it did not make her very marriageable to have this, you know, extra flap of skin on her forehead, because it wasn't very attractive. So what they would do with a female child that was born with this brow, which was considered a highly prophetic gift, is they would cut it off and put it in a jar. And so that's what they did to her. And she also was raised in her village, you know, helped people. Both of them, I should say, were very strict Roman Catholic. They believe that God gave them their gifts, and so consequently, when I was born, which was the next person in the family that was born with these gifts, you know, I was raised to keep it very private. I recognized the fact that, you know, if I was driving down the car, or down the street rather, in a car with my pop, you know, and I'd say to him, you know, Poppy, don't go that way, take another road, he would listen, you know, he would pay attention. My family would pay attention to things that I said to them, but they would never tell me why. And as a small child, you know, I was afraid of the dark, and I would see shadows and shapes and hear things and voices in my ear and see things, you know, that I, at the time, I guess I didn't realize that they were visions of what was going to be coming forthwith. But when I'd speak to my family about it, they would say to me, you don't see anything, you know, it's fine, we'll put the nightlight on, don't worry about it, there's nothing there, there's nothing to be afraid of, just go to sleep. So I was raised that way until about the age of 14, when I became a woman, right around the time I started menstruating. My gifts became very, very clear and much stronger. And I remember I was at the laundromat, actually, with my mom. And, you know, I came out and told her what happened. And she said, okay. You know, she gave me the woman speech. And then she said to me, there's something that I want to tell you. She said, you're not crazy. All those shapes and figures and voices that you've been hearing all this time, you know, both grandmas are gifted, and you're the same way. And it's a gift. You know, it's a special gift that you have, but you can't tell anyone about it because we don't want people in the community to mock you. We don't want children in the school to make fun of you. And we especially don't want the parish priest to know because it's frowned upon in the Catholic Church. So, and from that time on, you know, about until the time I was in my, I would say, mid-20s, I did keep it very much a secret. I did readings and things for family and close friends in the privacy of our home. But until it was much later in life that I decided, you know, and most of it, I have to admit, was from the prodding of, you know, cousins and things that were my age. You really should do this for the public. You should share your gifts with people. You know, we want to do a house party, things like that. And so that's when I decided to go public with my gifts. And considered, I guess, I've been tested in different gifts, and I've been diagnosed, as it were, as an empath clairvoyant, which means I feel other people's emotions, and I also at times take on other people's emotions. In other words, if they're sad, I feel sad. If they're happy, I feel happy. And it's been a struggle with me to learn how to take on those emotions and then filter them out. You know, feel what the person's feeling and, you know, no pun intended, empathize with what they're feeling, but not carry that around inside of me as well. In other words, if I were reading a person that was very, very sad, what would typically happen to me when I first started out was, I would be sad for the rest of the day and sometimes for 2 or 3 days and not understand why. So I had to learn how to filter that out and kind of protect myself so that when I helped someone with a reading or a healing, I wasn't saddled or left with the emotions that they felt at that particular point in time.
I know for myself, I have the empathic abilities as well, as you know from our previous conversations.
Right, right.
And I had the exact same issues when I was younger and was trying to learn how to deal with these gifts. I called them a curse until actually not all that long ago.
I think we all do at one point.
Well, so it took me a long time to learn how to filter out what were my own emotions and what were emotions from other people that I was just taking on. For a really long time, I didn't know the difference between the two. So I know exactly where you're coming from with all of that. It's very difficult, especially when you don't have anybody to talk to about it like I did. I had nobody that would acknowledge that any of this was going on, even though I knew and know now that my family has had this kind of stuff all along as well. None of them ever talked about it. None of them acknowledge it or anything like that. It just scares them too much, basically. But yeah, that's one thing I think that a lot of empathic people have an issue with, is not knowing how to discern what's theirs and what's others and how to get rid of it, basically, because you do take on that energy of the other person.
You absolutely do. And it's basically just a filter process. It's not a difficult process now, but having these gifts and having been born with them, and at the time that I was made aware of the fact that both of my grandmothers were gifted, they had both passed on. So I didn't have anyone to show me what to do. And all my life, up until my mid-30s, I just kind of went with the flow. You know, if I felt something, intuition or a feeling or a thought, I went with that. And I didn't know that, you know, I wasn't aware of the fact that you could take on other people's emotions and carry them with you. I wasn't aware that, you know, if I saw a spirit, I had a way to protect myself, or that there even existed a way to protect myself from negative energies and entities. You know, so it's been quite the learning process, you know, and also with empath, I've been diagnosed, as it were, with clairvoyant. That means I can see the future. Clairaudient, which means I do hear things. Typically, my angels and spirit guides speak to me in my right ear. One that comes to me the most is who I believe to be and, well, who I know to be, St. Michael, Archangel Michael. I'm a medium, so I do see dead people. Telepath, which means people who are like-minded, gifted telepathically, I can communicate with them. And also some healing qualities, some healing abilities that were given to me mostly, I think, from my Italian grandma. She was able to just touch people and take their pain away and make them feel better.
That's how mine is as well. I have not necessarily the ability to heal the disease or to, you know, heal the skin or something like that. But if someone is suffering from something, I can touch them and take it off of them. And essentially, I feel it for them for a time. Mm-hmm. And then I can kind of cast it away from myself so that neither of us are suffering. So is yours along that same line, or is it more that you sort of heal actually them?
I have to tell you again, you know, honestly, in the beginning, it was exactly as you had described it. I would feel their physical pain. And it wasn't until later on in life when I spoke to some other psychics and learned from them. And then also I did take Reiki's level 1 and 2 and learned some other healing modalities along the way that I realized that you don't always have to feel that pain. You know, there is a way where you can just kind of, your body's the conduit, as it were. It's almost like a plumbing pipe. And the energy can flow through you and out of you without you maintaining most of the physical ailments of people that you're helping. However, I must stress the fact that when I took my Reiki's level 1 and 2 classes, my teacher absolutely and adamantly declared that you will never feel the pain from another human being when you're healing them. And I'm here to tell you that's absolutely not the case. There are still times, especially with people who are very, very ill with cancer and terminal diseases, where I just, you know, I get migraines or headaches or just feel very, very tired afterward. Now, I've been told from my teacher that, you know, that shouldn't be. You should be able to heal and not feel the effects of that at all. But, boy, I'll tell you, I really don't feel that's the case. I think anybody that's a healer, you're sacrificing a little bit of your life energy, your ki, or whatever you'd like to call it, with helping others. And I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that.
I kind of had the same thoughts as well. And I wonder if the people that have the healing abilities, but not the empathic abilities, maybe they're the ones that don't actually have the pain feelings, but those that have both the empathic and the healing abilities are capable of feeling that pain because of the empathy, basically.
You know, that's an amazing point. I'd never thought of it that way, but it does feel right. You know, that makes sense to me, perfect sense to me. So you very well could have hit something on the head there, you know.
I'm good at thinking sideways.
I feel like I'm not a B-grade student with my Reiki master.
Well, you know, the interesting thing to me is I take a scientific approach to things with regards to the more woo-woo type of stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, as far as the empathy thing is concerned, it's really just a matter of thinking, well, everything is energy. Everything. We're all made up of energy, and everything that we feel, think, you know, emotions, whatever it may be, all of these things are an energy. They're a frequency that we output from ourselves. So if someone, for instance, is just sensitive to frequencies like the electromagnetic frequencies that are coming off of somebody, because we all do generate an electromagnetic field around us, there are those that are just sensitive to that and can essentially co-opt the energies that are coming from somebody else and make it the same energies that you're now feeling, you know? So it's, there's actually a scientific explanation to it if science actually acknowledges it.
Right. Right. And that is the key, isn't it? If science actually acknowledges it. Because as you and I both know, in the typical frame of reference, as far as science, as far as most of the world is privy to knowing about, we're a bunch of cracks, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not real. It's all in our imagination. So, yeah, absolutely, it's energy. And that's a very good point, you know. That's a very valid point. I never thought of it that way. So thank you for pointing that out to me.
Well, sure. I'm good at thinking sideways, I guess. Well, you said that both of your grandmothers had the same type of abilities, the type of things that you're talking about here. Did you ever really have a chance to hear anything from them about it all? Were they able to, like, see spirits as well or anything along those lines? I mean, what basically did you pick up from them in your experiences?
Well, actually, my grandma Millie comes to me now, and we've had some pretty awesome conversations. Growing up, though, as a child, the only thing that I really heard about were family stories, you know, from either side of the family regarding, you know, each particular grandmother. So I know that my grandma Millie saw spirits. I know that she was a healer. I know that she was very respected in her village and then here in certain circles in our community as a reader, you know, a seer. She, you know, it's funny because she had the energy and still has the energy that to me, it amazes me. She's got to be, without a doubt, one of the most powerful, gifted people that I've ever had the pleasure of coming in contact with. And the reason that I say that is when she appears to me, she's just so physical. I actually have a painting upstairs at the top of my hallway that you have no choice when you turn the landing to come down the stairs but to look up and stare into this picture. And for years, it was hidden in our attic. And when we had some changes, my house had three stories. It was three different apartments, the house that I grew up in. And my family being on my dad's side, Italian immigrants, they migrated to the Bronx. They came here to the Bronx, had a house there, and then they moved to upstate New York where they built this three-family house. And the reason for that was because they were raised to take care of your family. So my grandma and my grandpa lived downstairs, and then my pop and my mom lived in the middle apartment, and then their child lived in the uppermost apartment, their son. And I guess I should clarify a little bit. When I speak of my grandmothers, I really mean my great-grandmothers. My grandparents raised me for most of my childhood, or actually from the middle of my childhood until I left the home as my parents, because I had a very, very troubled childhood. Okay. So when I say pop and mom, meaning what I was raised to know as my parents for the most part, they're actually my grandparents. Does that make sense to you?
Oh yeah, totally.
So my great grandma from Italy, there was this picture in the attic for years. And, when there were some changes, as I said, some moves within the family, my grandma Millie and my grandpa Alfredo passed on. You know, we started to rifle through the attic, and one of our family members came across this portrait that had been painted from one of her visits back to her home country, back to Italy. And we couldn't figure out why it was up in the attic. So we brought it down, and we were looking at it, and everybody in the family was like, "That picture's really creepy. I don't want it. You know, I can't even look at that picture. It frightens me. I don't want that picture. You know, put it back where it came from." And I said to them, "Are you crazy? That's Grandma. I want the picture. I'll take the picture." So I took it and I hung it in my landing. And Ira, I'm telling you what, It's like Dorian Gray. The eyes move on that picture. And it's a painting done by a local artist, I guess, somewhere in Italy. My guess would be, knowing my Grandma Millie and her sense of humor, that she commissioned this particular person to paint her portrait, knowing, you know, that he had some sort of special energy or something. But everyone who's ever come into my house and gone down those bathroom steps has asked me, what's the deal with that picture? Because they're kind of freaked out by it. But it does, no matter which way you look at it, to the left of it, to the right of it, to the center, dead on, it appears as though the eyes move. So it's kind of a cool thing, you know. But her energy is very, very much here when it wants to be. My grandmother from Ireland, not so much. She was a healer. She did do tea leaves and things like that as well. She had the gift of prophecy. She was able to see ahead and have dreams. And that much I know to be true from my side of the family, you know, on that particular side. So hers was more prophetic. That was her strongest gift.
Well, you said that you were raised in the Roman Catholic Church.
Yes.
And one thing that I was going to ask, I had a lot of weird religious things in my background as well. I mean, my mom was raised a Catholic. My dad was raised as an atheist. We went to a Baptist church and they sent us to a Lutheran school. So I had some very confusing things in my religious background, but coming from sort of the strict, Roman Catholic background, do you see, I guess, a lot of trouble from it because of that upbringing, like steered you incorrectly because of that upbringing?
Well, the most, how do I put this delicately? I guess the biggest thing with me that I was raised with in the church is, when you die, you know, there's purgatory and heaven and hell. And you go to one of the three places, purgatory first usually, and then, you know, heaven or hell. Given that, the Catholic Church would like for you to believe that the soul dies. But you and I both know that the soul doesn't die.
Yeah.
It lives on. And that's probably one of the biggest problems that I have being raised Catholic, was, you know, knowing that, you know, I'm seeing things. I'm seeing people who have passed on, family members, friends, random people, you know, coming to me in my room at nighttime that I hadn't seen before, that were telling me how they perished and asking me to give a message or talk to a family member for them. And so I very much knew that the soul did not die. Another thing is heaven and hell. I'm here to tell you that I honestly believe hell is a state of mind just as heaven is. And, you know, there are people that suffer traumatically throughout their lifetimes on this earth, and that's their form of hell. And they also know, you know, the purest elation and pureness of spirit and goodness, and heaven lives inside of them. That's kind of how I look at it. I mean, that's my own personal belief, just based on my own experiences. The other thing is atonement for sins, you know, the whole confession thing. I believe if you're a good person and you live your life as a good person, you're entitled to make mistakes. And I don't believe that our God or our higher power or whatever it is that you believe in really is out to punish you. The Catholic Church is so fear-based. You know, just, it's just, I don't know how else to put it, you know.
In my experience of things,
you've got to be afraid.
Yeah.
You've got to be afraid and reverent and worship how they tell you to worship and do exactly what they tell you to do, or you're going to go to hell, you know. And I don't believe that.
In a lot of my experience, a lot of churches, not necessarily all, but a lot of churches, both Catholic, Christian, other types of churches as well, a lot of them are focused on the monetary type of side of things. And
that was the other part of it.
That, with that fear, it's, it, that fear is created as a means to channel finances into the church to keep it going. You know, they make you afraid of suffering for eternal damnation or whatever, and but you're okay if you give them 10% of your cash, you know? Mm-hmm. A lot of times I see that in the churches, that's what they're focused on. I mean, you look at some of the mega churches, for instance, and they make more money than small towns do. You know, I mean, it's craziness. In my religious experience, when I was being raised with the gifts that I had, which are really right in line with your own, the only thing I don't do is the clairaudience, but, I was basically lambasted by my peers and by the church as being demonic. You know, these are demonic powers that you have. And it caused a really hard dichotomy in the brain because, okay, if I'm healing somebody, in my experience of things, if knowing demons the way that I do, and they do exist, they are not out to help anybody in any way, shape, or form, unless it benefits them somehow. And if I, as a person who has the ability to heal somebody, can take the suffering from somebody, or if I can, with my empathic abilities, pull out a trauma that's been tainting this person's life for their whole existence and make their life from that point forward go better, without any reward to it at all, and in fact, most of the time they don't even realize that it's happening, then what is the advantage to me there? Where's the demonicness in that? Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. When I was in elementary school, the first four grades I was in Catholic school because that's where my folks wanted me to be, there were, you know, nuns, sisters, and back then it was a lot different than it is now. They wore the formal habit, and they were very strict. And I had two nuns in particular. They were twins. I'll never forget their names, Sister Georgia and Georgiana. And the principal of our school was named Sister John Marie. And I remember very, very distinctly them coming into our classroom one day, and I believe we were in third grade. We were learning cursive. They came into the classroom like a small army, and interrupted the teacher. And I overheard them actually say, "We need to know which students in this classroom are left-handed." And so my teacher pointed them out. One of them, you know, was me. And the principal, I overheard her say, we need to make them write with their right hands, because if they write with their left hands, they're believed to be possessed by the devil.
Oh, jeez. So
they spent the rest of the day, and some of the children were in tears, taking the pens every time we'd pick it up out of habit with our left hand and forcefully putting it in our right hand. And I remember the principal standing directly over me, looming, and every time I picked up the pen, put it in my left hand, she would forcefully take it from me. She had a ruler. She didn't smack my knuckles, but she would kind of brandish the ruler at me, put it in my right hand, the pen, and say, "You need to write with this hand." So at the end of the day, you know, some of us were extremely distraught, and I was just very angry. Very angry and upset. And, you know, we all went home and told our folks what had happened, and the parents went back and raised holy heck the next day, and that didn't happen again. But, you know, the trivialities that, you know, the Catholic Church, I can speak of only in particular because that's my background, that they attribute to demonic or evil. It's absolutely ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
You know? And as you said, if you're here for a good and you're here for a purpose and you're here to help people, how could you be evil? You know, and we've spoken of this before, you and I, in private conversation. There's good and bad in everyone.
Yeah.
You know, but if our intentions are good and we're out to help people, you know, how can what we do be considered so wrong or so evil, you know?
And the thing that I point out to those that are of that kind of hyper-religious bent is that the Bible itself talks about for example, I think it's either 1st or 2nd Corinthians, talks about the different spiritual gifts that are given by the Holy Spirit, including prophecy, healing, you know, all types of different spiritual abilities, okay? Talks about how the Holy Spirit will give this as a gift to the believer. So where is the problem there? You know, in your own biblical text, it talks about the fact that people are going to have these things. Jesus himself said, "These things I will do, and you can do as well, and more." You see what I mean? All the things that he did, everybody can do, and more.
And that's what I've come to believe, is that it's all a concept. You know, and the Bible was transcribed from human to human. And when you think about things in history that have happened, you know, the Crusades and all those horrible, horrible things, witch hunts in Salem, you know, anything like that, it was all based on fear. And so, you know, humankind, mankind, transcribed what I feel they wanted us to know. And there are so many secrets that are lost in the true teachings of Christ. You know, I don't believe we'll ever see, you know, because I honestly believe that his belief, or the maker's belief, whatever you know, your particular religion, and I'll get to that in a minute, that brings up an interesting point as well, but basically we all have the ability to be as Jesus was. It's a matter of our own personal efforts as to how highly we're able to climb up the ladder to be as close to Godlike as possible. And when I say Godlike, a lot of people get upset with me because they say, oh, you're one of those, you know, you're a false prophet. Not at all the case. What I'm saying to you is, and what I say to them is, when you try very hard every day to be a good person and a kind person and a caring person and to help others, that makes you closer to Jesus or closer to God. And so, therefore, if you're doing the right things and helping people and trying to live a good lifestyle, you know, you can become closer to God. And God, I think, lives in each and every one of us. You know, I think we all have that potential. And I think that's what his true teachings were and his true intent was for us as humankind. Now, having said that, I also, the last year or two have read a lot of teachings of Buddha and different spiritual leaders from different parts of the world and their histories. And I honestly believe that Jesus and Buddha and Jehovah, whoever you believe in, they are all, they were all made by the same person or created by the same energy, as it were. And they're all, no matter what their religion, they're fractured parts of the same belief. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes, it does very much.
So that basically all these different religions that we have started from one basis, one true meaning of how we as humans can live in harmony and peace and help each other. It's just that along the way, whatever human transcribed that particular part of the Bible or the Quran or whatever it is that you follow, you know, they kind of put their spin on it. And that's what fractured the religions as a whole, I believe, you know. But that's my take on it.
A lot of problem, I think, is because when things were passed down, either orally or written-wise or whatever, most of the great unwashed masses didn't have the ability to read. They didn't have the ability to understand. So a lot of these, I call them the priests of chaos and blight. They would use these things to their own advantages. They would use these things and they would make things up as they went, basically. And then those were then later transcribed as being the quote unquote word of God, because mm-hmm. the priest spoke it. It's just like with the Pope, whatever the Pope says is the word of God, you see.
Right.
And yet they'll change their minds constantly. Well, God is constant. So, but you're right on lines with what I think as well, that the basic fact is that we as human beings, we've been lied to all along about who and what we really are. We're told that we're animals. We're told that we're born sinful and that we have to claw our way back to heaven, either through good deeds or through acceptance of forgiveness by, you know, accepting Jesus Christ or whatever it may be. And yet that's not actually the case. We are actually these wonderful creative forces of the universe, and we have full control over whatever it is that we want to do as our own destiny. But when a child is raised to think that they are bad, they are going to be bad. Does that make sense?
It does. And what are we doing to our children and society as a whole when we're raising them to be, excuse me, to live in fear? You know, we're just quenching so much of their creative ability and so much of their individuality that way, I think. You know, much along the same lines as treating our children for disorders that I don't know truly are disorders in most of the cases. Which is why I wrote the books that I did. Children who are being diagnosed the last 15, 20 years with ADHD or any of those types of things, it's my belief that they were just born gifted, a lot of them, and people don't understand their gifts. And so if they won't sit in their chair and pay attention to the teacher, possibly because they feel like they know more than the teacher, or because they're, you know, they're seeing things in their mind that, you know, they're gifted, they're being punished for that. And that was a big reason for me with the books. It was, especially after the childhood that I had, I really wanted, my dream was always to help children. You know, not just the sick and the elderly, although that was a big part of it. I wanted to be able to do something for children, because having grown up the way that I did, I didn't think that it was fair. And I didn't think that children who are gifted should be lied to, should be hidden in a closet. But I also believe that they should be educated in order to, let's say, protect themselves if something comes into the room at night that they're not quite sure what it is. Know that it's not a family member that's visiting them, but maybe something not totally good, you know? And also being able to use their energy in positive ways to help others, and to be able to have a positive mindset too. I think that's important. So the first book that I wrote is called No More Monsters. And, you know, the amazing thing about these books is that they're for all children. You know, they're a storybook. They have colored pictures. They're simple messages. But the great thing about them is that they were developed with gifted children in mind to help them understand their gifts, so that if they see something in the room at night that frightens them, they don't need to be afraid of it. And the second one, there are four in the series, but I've only gotten two published. The second one, I Am Energy, speaks to, you know, how to, you know, if your friend is sad, you can kind of make them feel better with your energies and your thought process, and change your vibrations as well. It's a very simple message, but very effective. And so, and these books, by the way, were channeled to me, which I thought was very interesting too. So it's almost like my angels and my spirit guides had been listening to my prayers all along, you know, when I'd asked them to please help me find a way to help these children so that they don't have to suffer and grow up the way you and I did.
That actually brings me to a couple of questions that I wanted to ask you as far as your spirit guides and angels are concerned.
Okay.
When did they first approach you?
Okay. Well, I'd heard the voices all my life. I don't know how it is for you or for other people who are born like us or even recognize their gifts later in life, but all of my life, whenever someone was thinking badly of me or, let's say, jealous of me or upset with me, I would feel a vibration in my left ear, whether it be a heated burning or a high-pitched ringing, something always in my left ear. And it would depend on the intensity and the frequency. I came to realize as to how badly that person was talking about me or thinking of me. And then in my right ear was always good. So, and it got to the point where, and I have read different psychic books about this, where it became a guessing game. If I felt a vibration or a humming or a warmth in my right ear, I would guess. I would think of people and guess. And when the ringing or the frequency vibration or the warmth stopped, I would know I'd hit the person on the head that was sending me that particular energy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it's sort of along the lines of a weird means, and I kind of use that word lightly, a weird means of the knocking thing, you know, like knock once for yes and two for no type thing.
This, when I speak of this, the left and the right, though, this is from a human standpoint. This was a physical being. And it wasn't until much later in life that I recognized the voices that I heard were actually angels, particularly, as I said, Archangel Michael. He comes to me quite a bit. I only know this because I felt it up until about, you know, maybe 2 years ago, and he said to me, "I am Michael." So that's how I know that's who that is. And the messages that I get a lot of times, too, it's almost like there are a group of them speaking together, if that makes sense to you.
Like as a chorus?
But they're not singing, and that's the thing.
Yeah, but I mean like speaking as a chorus, as in all together at once.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's very strange. It's like there are many of them together speaking as one almost. If that makes sense to you.
Yeah. What it actually reminds me of, and I've heard a lot of people actually speaking about channeling and hearing that type of thing. And it reminds me a lot of the old Greek tragedies where on stage they would have the chorus. They would have a chorus repeating back or telling the side story of what is going on the stage so that the people that are in the audience can understand what's happening. Every time that I hear somebody speaking about this kind of chorus thing, that's what it always reminds me of. And I wonder if that's actually where that got its start from, is that people were hearing these things and actually wrote it down in the play like that.
Could very well be. You know, a lot of times it's Michael. Sometimes it's a female. Sometimes it's another male. They've given me names. My spirit guides feel different to me. I have a native spirit guide that comes to me, and I always see him in my mind when I hear him. Okay, so I have a visual with that. There's another one that recently came to me. And, you know, and again, the spirit guides just have a different feel to them. And I don't know that I can explain it to you. The angels just are more pure. They always call me Little One, by the way. Ever since I was small, I always get called Little One. And Michael particularly, you know, Little One. And Dear One. Dear One. I get Dear One a lot from him. My Child. I hear that sometimes, too. But Little One is the one that stuck with me the most. And the angels just have, they're clearer. They come to me with more profound messages. The spirit guides offer guidance, but it's just, it's a different feel to it. And I don't know that I could explain it to you. And always with them, like I said, I feel more of a physical presence other than with the angels, except for St. Michael. He's very physical with me.
One thing that I've heard people describe is that with when they're speaking to sort of like angel beings or something along those lines, they tend to speak in messages that are more for the masses, whereas a spirit guide is much more of a personal advisor to things.
Yeah, something like that. Exactly. You know, that's kind of the way it is for me. Other than the fact that the angels, but I guess that's kind of the case, because when they speak to me, it's a message of guidance, but it's like we were talking about the other night, it's what I'm supposed to be doing, you know?
Right, it's something ultimately for the rest of humanity.
I think so, yeah. You know, they do give me personal messages as well, but I have to tell you, when I meditate and ask for an answer, it depends on the subject matter as to who I get, if that makes sense?
It does, yeah.
Okay, all right. So it's one, hard to explain, but
one thing I would say, just to play devil's advocate here, because I know that listeners will be thinking along these lines as well.
Yeah, they already know I'm nuts, I'm sure.
Yeah. So what about something like schizophrenia? Have you ever considered that it could be something along those lines, or do you have sort of a rebuttal to that statement?
Yeah, no, because the messages that I receive and the things that I know, I have no other way of knowing.
There
does
you
that
go.
Make sense?
It does, and that's actually the answer that I was looking for with it. I see that a lot when people say, "Oh, well, it's just something like schizophrenia or something like that," but then you are expressing things that you've never had any exposure to. How would you have known that without that exposure, at least at some point?
Exactly. I mean, the stuff that they tell me, there's no other way that I would know. And it's not a matter of me going back and forth, you know, I want eggs for breakfast. No, I want bacon for breakfast. No, I want eggs for breakfast. It's not an internal battle by any means. It's usually very soft. It's gentle. If I don't pay attention or listen, however, it does get increasingly more insistent at times and sometimes louder. It's guidance. Yeah. It's not, I don't know how other to explain it other than I've worked with people who are mentally ill and developmentally disabled throughout my whole life, you know, both on personal and professional levels, and it's just not the same thing. I don't have a personality disorder. I don't have anything like that wrong with me, if you want to, and that's really not the right term to use, but I haven't been diagnosed with any of that, and I've had some pretty intensive studies done. It's just, it's messages, you know, it's guidance. Yep. It's always positive. It's never negative.
Which a lot of times schizophrenics do have that there's a lot of times a negativity to what's being said to them or, you know, what they're hearing from whatever it may be.
Yeah, the only time I've ever encountered that, when there's been something that's not of the light coming to me. And I have had some experiences with that, with some negative energies, you know. And keep in mind, it's not wrestling within myself. I physically see and feel the outside presence, you know, in the room with me. And they're belligerent, you know, because they're not good spirits. They're not good energy. So it's an outside thing. It's not a turmoil, a battle inside of myself with these energy beings or angels or spirit guides. They're always outside of my body, removed from me. Does that make sense? Does that help to make it clearer?
It sure does. Yep. Okay. Real quick, we're going to have to go ahead and take a real quick break here. When we come back from the break, I'd like to get into some more of the more ghostly experiences that you've had. I think that a lot of people are really interested in that subject because it's something that almost everybody has dealt with at least at some point, even if they don't really realize that they have. So a lot of people are interested in that kind of paranormal side of things. So we'll go ahead and take this break here real quick. Everybody stick around. You are listening to Open Eyes. We have Maggie Hart with us, and she is definitely been a wonderful person to speak to. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Tune into The Family Factor with Denny C. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning at 5 a.m. as he looks at all the challenges facing the family today. Denny will give you a refreshingly new look at tackling some of the biggest issues. So start your day off on the right foot with Denny C. and The Family Factor, right here on the New Spark Radio Network and K98Talk.com.
Sunshine.
The Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network is deeply devoted to you, the listener. We feel it is necessary to bring you all of the information that you can use in your life. Each and every day, you will find something to listen to here. And whether you come away from the shows informed, inspired, or entertained, it is our passion. We don't bow to corporations, and we don't have handlers to tell us what not to talk about. We bring you everything. Late Night in the Midlands, however, is fully listener-supported. We need your help to stay on the air and to make sure that we get the bills paid. We need your help to keep the truth alive. If you feel that you have gotten anything out of Late Night in the Midlands, we would appreciate your support. You can become a subscriber and help us out on a monthly basis, or if you'd like, a one-time donation is fully appreciated as well. Every year, the average household in America spends over $3,000 on entertainment alone. If you could help us with just a tiny fraction of that amount, you would make all of the difference. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Thank you, and as always, keep yourself informed.
Fighting a battle, we're singing the same song, trying to find someone who cares as much as we do. We're climbing the ladder.
welcome back to Open Eyes. My name is Ira Robinson, and we are having a really interesting conversation with Maggie Hart. Maggie, I wanted to get a little bit into the more ghostly spirit side of things. I was wondering if you could tell us what, in your experience, has been your favorite encounters or ones that stick out in your mind the most as, wow, that was a really cool experience when it comes to ghosts or spirits.
Okay, well, I've got to tell you, my favorite, because it's the most positive, is the one that I did just a few months ago, most recently. After about 5 years of searching, I'd been looking for a ghost team to come with me so that I could do some formal investigations and ghost tours, things like that, because that's definitely something that I'm very interested in, and I know that the public likes as well. So it's kind of neat going on a tour or a hunt with a psychic, because you not only get the history of the building, you know, and, you know, what's been captured previously maybe on photographs, but as I walk room to room, I'm able to give them the energy at that particular point in time and let them know who's in the room with us and what I'm feeling and seeing. So it's a really interesting take on it. It's very cool. It's different, I think. I don't watch a lot of television. There's probably 5 syndicated shows out there like it by now, but I thought it was unique, and I think it's interesting. I have 2 people that work with me. Their names are Tim and Corey. They're amazing. They photograph, they audio tape, they use these fancy meters like you see on Ghost Hunters. I don't know what they do except they make noise. I'm not really technical when it comes to that sort of thing. When I walk into a room to do an investigation or a tour, I'm focused solely on what I feel and what I see and what I hear. And then they do all the scientific part of it. And then we all sit together afterward and, you know, go over the pictures. And it's really great because I can just look at Tim and point and say, blow that orb up. There's something in there that I know, you know, we need to see, whether it be a face or an energy or a color or a something. Or I'll say to, and Corey's really, really good at picking things out of pictures too. You know, they're so amazing, and I love working with them. But we did have the occasion a few months ago to visit a very, very historical, well-known theater in our area that had previously done ghost tours with another individual and was very kind of down with what we do. And I had wanted to get into that particular establishment for about 5 years. Every time I'd driven past there, it just called to me. And I had the opportunity to do so, and it was probably the most positive to date of my career. Reason being, when I walked in with my guys, who had been there before with the manager or the girl in charge there, the energy was just so friendly. They were very, very accepting of our being there. They were very, very happy to find someone that could communicate with them. And every time I've gone back since, it's just, I walk up the back door and through the theater, and it's like the crowd is there. The theater is full, and I hear, hi, welcome. You know, it's just so positive and happy and loving, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place for me. It's my absolute favorite place to date to visit. It feels like coming home to me when I go there. And the spirits come out, and they're just so present. You know, when I go in there, I'd asked the first time that I went, I usually typically when I'm doing a ghost tour for the public, I'll ask that anything that would like to communicate with us to please do so. However, it be in a friendly and gentle manner. They can touch us, although gently, and please not scare some of us if we're prone to being scared. And then just, you know, come forward and let us know that you're here. Well, when I did that, Tim and Corey, when we looked at the pictures, and also the manager, were like, they were mind blown, because they're like, we didn't, there's like hundreds of orbs in the picture of the theater. And, you know, there are faces in so many of the orbs in the theater. I mean, really physical, pronounced features. You can see the shapes of their nose, the shapes of their eyes, the shapes of their mouth, whether they're smiling or frowning. And the really cool thing is, because this place had done ghost tours before previously with someone, they kind of knew who was there. And I had asked before we did the investigation, you know, please just don't tell me anything. I won't go on the internet. I don't want to know anything about this place. I want to go in cold. For legitimacy reasons, because so many people question, you know, what we do. And when we went to the stage part of it, there's an upper left hand, I don't know, it's kind of like a balcony or something. It appeared to me to be like a private room where special guests were brought to have a private box of the theater, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I kept seeing a man up in that particular private box. There was one on each side. There's one on the left and one on the right. And I said to Tim, get some pictures of that box, because there's a guy up there and he's staring at me. And he likes me, but he's very, very sad. Well, lo and behold, when we finally got around to looking at the pictures and we focused in on that, you know, balcony box, private box, whatever, there's very, very clearly the figure of a young man in several of the pictures. So the really cool thing about it is we were able to discover another ghost for the legacy of the history of that place that previously had been unrecognized. So that's really neat, too. You know, and it's just, honestly, it's the overall feeling. Every time I go in there, it's like coming to a family reunion where there are like 100 people there. It's just very positive, very loving, very happy, playful. So that's my favorite, as far as personally speaking. My favorite thing to do is when I'm able to connect with the spirit of a deceased loved one for someone. I mean, my goal is always to help people. So if I'm able to encounter, and connect a loved one with someone who's passed over that they miss, especially around this time of year, around the holiday time, you know, and give them a message or two and, you know, shoot information back and forth, and I'm able to validate with them that the person that I'm speaking to is in fact, you know, the relative or friend or, you know, whatever in question. That's really what makes it worthwhile for me, just to be able to see them smile. And, you know, there are usually a lot of tears. It's very emotional, but they're happy tears because they're able to connect with someone that previously they hadn't been able to talk to since they had, buried them or cremated them. And the ghosts get very, very excited, too, because, you know, they're able to talk through me. They're able to pass through a message for their loved ones and friends that, you know, they hadn't been able to do previously. So that just makes it magic for me. That's what it's all about. My favorite experience, personally speaking, of a family member would be my pop. He had cancer, and it was diagnosed later in life. He was in his 90s when he died. But he was diagnosed with cancer about a year and a half before, and my mom, who was my grandma who raised me, had died of cancer, and she suffered very terribly with it. And when he found out that he had cancer of the lymph nodes, he said, I'm not going through any of that. He said, I'm not going to go through treatment. I'm going to let it take its course, and I'm going to die when I'm supposed to die. So when he got sick, my daughter was extremely close with him. He was her whole universe. And it was very, very traumatic for her, very traumatic. She was in shock. She was in disbelief. So when we were down there and I had to go pick out his funeral clothing and make arrangements for the services, I was in like a large department store. I think I was looking for a tie or something. And I wanted everything to be perfect for him for when they laid him out. So I knew what I wanted in my head, and I wasn't going to settle until I found what I wanted for him to wear, for the services. And I happened to be coming to the register, and there was like a huge bin of, you know, those like bargain movies or sale movies that you see like in Walmart, those big square things. And my daughter, being raised with my pop, was a fan of John Wayne. She wasn't allowed to watch most cable programs, but he watched her. He babysat her for her first 4 years of life for me. And they would watch, you know, Andy Griffith and Nick at Night and family-based positive shows. But his passion was cowboy movies, and he loved John Wayne. So because of that, she became a huge fan of John Wayne. And I was going through, and I just was going through the register, and I looked down, and there at the very top was a John Wayne movie, and it was one that she didn't have already. So I picked it up, and I brought it, you know, put it up on the counter with the tie or whatever I was buying or socks, and went home to my pop's house. And I thought, well, you know, when we get back home to our house and she's feeling sad, I'm going to give her this movie and let her know that Poppy, you know, Poppy told me to get this movie for her. So after the services and everything were over, we got back home, and sure enough, we weren't home maybe a day or two, and she was sitting here in the living room with me and very, very distraught and crying, and I went and got the movie. And much to my amazement, I flipped over the back of the DVD, and on the back of the cover, there was a lily. And the lily had reds in it and pinks. It was a very, very pretty lily. And it just so happens that I special ordered those particular lilies for his funeral arrangements for the flowers for my daughter and I. So that was a very significant message to me that, you know, hey, I'm here. And a lot of people don't recognize when people pass that they leave so many messages. We just don't always grasp them because we're too busy grieving and being sorry for their loss. And they're really struggling to let us know, hey, I'm still with you in spirit. I'm sending you these messages, but you're not getting them. You're not picking them up. So that one to me was like, it was wonderful. And when I showed her the flower, and she immediately recognized it as one of the ones that we had had for our flowers at his funeral and his wake, that made her feel better. And so we went to bed at night, and when Pop passed, he wasn't able to eat or drink very much, and so his voice became quite raspy. Well, I went in to tuck her into bed, and because I was so distraught for her and so much in pain for her pain, you know, just feeling so sorry for everything that she had to go through, I got a habit, you know, I don't know if you do this with your children, Ira, but like I kiss her and kiss her and kiss her and kiss her and hug her and squeeze her, and she'd say to me, Mom, she would say to me that night, I'm tired, just leave me alone, I want to go to sleep. And I'd be like, okay, honey, but then I'd pick her up and I'd hug her and squeeze her and kiss her 15 more times, and she'd be like pushing me away, leave me alone, Mom, I'm tired. And, you know, she was cranky from the stress of the past week, and she wanted to go to sleep. So I said, okay, just let me give you one more kiss. And I started, you know, woodpecker kissing her cheek again, and all of a sudden I heard this very loud crash from the bathroom. So I'm like, what the heck? So I got up and I went into the bathroom, and the trash pail in the bathroom was literally kicked across the room, laying on its side up against the bathroom sink. And I looked at it and I went, what the heck happened? And as plain as day in my right ear, I heard in my pop's voice, the voice that he had, the raspy voice right before he passed, I told you to leave that goddamn kid alone, let her sleep. You know? So when Pop comes to visit, it's always an experience. We watched football together growing up, as did my daughter. He was a huge, huge Giants football fan. And anytime I put this television on and I sit in this living room, he's with me. To the point where I've actually had to call people in from the other room, you know, family members or friends, and there's an actual indentation on the sofa next to me. And being raised Italian, anytime I cook anything that was one of his favorite meals, you know, he'll come right into the kitchen, and you can, you know, I can see him. He's taking a deep inhalation of breath, and he'll say to me, that smells so good, I wish I can taste it. Boy, that's the thing I miss most, is the food. I miss the food. You know? That's one of my favorite. And I was taught old school. I was raised, you know, to cook everything from scratch, and I have the family recipes, so it's very much the way it is. It's the same as the food that he ate when he was here. So that one's special to me personally. Another one that comes to mind is there was a lady I did a reading for this past summer, and she had lost her husband, who was a police officer. And to this house party, she brought her two daughters and one of the daughter's sons. Well, when I first got there and I looked at the little boy, I knew right away that he was gifted. I don't know, I'm sure that you can. We recognize each other by looking into each other's eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look into another gifted person's eyes, you just recognize those qualities instantly. At least I do.
Yep.
So this little boy was very special. And the mom was very distraught. I started out with her reading, I believe. It's been a couple months, several months. But she had told me that there were some financial hardships with the passing of her husband, and that her children, her two daughters, were very, very distraught over the loss of their dad, and that she was giving away and selling some of his personal belongings, and the one thing that he really, really valued the most was his motorcycle. And her daughter had a fiance who rode bikes and had expressed an interest in having her husband's motorcycle. And she said, you know, I just don't know what I'm going to do. She said, they don't have the money to purchase it. I need the money to be able to continue on. But I've decided if we can find the key for it, I'd just give it to my future son-in-law for the cost of repairs to get it running properly for him before he took it. So I said, all right. Well, her husband came right through and offered many messages of hope and encouragement and just consolation to her, and let her know that he was very proud of her for the way that she carried on with the two girls. And he told me to tell her to look in the brown box. There's a little brown box. Tell her to look in the brown box. She hasn't checked there yet. The key's in the box. So I did a reading for both of the girls, and we spoke about the little boy. And the little boy, it turns out, did see Grandpa and played with Grandpa, but they didn't realize, you know, when he was tossing the ball across the room or he was talking to something unseen, that it was their dad, until I helped them to understand that, you know. But anyway, they went home. It was very emotional. They went home and they got a hold of me the next day, and the key was in the box. So they were able to pass on the dad's motorcycle to the future son-in-law so that I was able to stay in the family. So that was really cool. You know, that one was a special one. Another one is Lowell. My Uncle George has a best friend who passed. His name was Lowell. I never had the privilege of meeting this man, but they say he was a very stand-up guy, very straightforward, country person, you know, didn't take any guff, but said what he meant and meant what he said, and was a very just kind and gentle person, but had a very protective nature. And my uncle was very, very upset when he passed. Lowell had a camp maybe an hour or so from my Uncle George, and he and his wife resided down south, and they would come up to summer and spend at the camp and go hunting and fishing or whatever. Lowell, as being a protective force, you know, a protective person toward both my uncle and his family, apparently, I just found this out this past weekend, I didn't know this, but my Uncle George was speaking to his buddy when he was sick, and he said to him, you know, I have a niece that can communicate with spirits. And Lowell had said to him, well, you know, if she can hear me, I'm going to drive that girl crazy. Well, since his passing, I have to tell you, anytime there's something in the family or inside the family circle, in other words, close family friends, that's askew or doesn't go exactly the way Lowell would like for it to happen, he appears in my kitchen. And, you know, he's usually pacing back and forth, hand gesturing, talking a mile a minute, very loud. And, you know, it was kind of we had to come to an agreement, because he would appear whenever, and it didn't matter what I was doing. He would just show up in my kitchen, and he would want me to pay sole attention to him. So I had to explain to him, you know, buddy, you can't do this. If you want to come and visit and you have a message that you'd like to pass along to Uncle George or a family member, you need to make sure that it's okay and that I have the time to do that with you. You can't just come in here like gangbusters and you know, interrupt my whole family. Because of course I'm seeing them and they're wondering what the heck I'm looking at and talking to, you know? So we have an understanding now, and now typically what he'll do is he'll hang back and wait for me to be free, but he's very agitated and impatient until I do so. And he does let me know that he's still here waiting until I get to him. But he's really cool. He's become a buddy of mine.
When you have the different experiences that you have, like with any of the gifts, I know for me, I come away from it every time with this feeling of, wow, that was really cool. I still can't get over the fact that I can do this stuff. You know, do you ever experience that as well? Or
I do. You know, every time that I'm able to do a reading for somebody or that I have an experience with someone that's passed over. And, you know, keep in mind, too, that a lot of times when I see people, I'm really not sure at the onset who they're trying to reach, you know, or who they're in connection with. Right away, you know, unless I actually physically recognize the person, you know. So it's so amazing to me when I'm able to help them get a message across to somebody that needs it, you know, or communicate something important from the other side to a living spirit. I mean, that's just amazing to me, you know, and I'm so thankful for that.
I am too. Yeah, exactly. It's in my experience dealing with spirits, and I've had a lot of them, you know, I've kind of gone over them with you in our personal conversations together. In my experience, a lot of them come to those of us who can see or hear them or feel them because they know that we can, and they want to get their story out. They want to have that attention paid to them, you know, like they still have something that they want to speak, basically.
Yeah, and that was my biggest, one of my biggest stumbling blocks, aside from fear and negativity from negative entities rather than energies, was learning how to protect myself and set guidelines. I had a particular experience one night where I was woken from my sleep and there was a hanged young man standing next to my bed, and you know, he scared the bejesus out of me. I wasn't expecting it, I wasn't anticipating it, and you know, it was very grotesque, you know, because he appeared the way he had passed, and he needed me to give a message to his mom, I think it was. And then there have been times where, you know, I've been woken up from a sound sleep and there's literally a black cloud one time hovering over me. It was a very negative, very negative, I hesitate to say the word evil, but evil energy, and it was almost like pushing down on me physically. And I did have some experiences, some really scary experiences, with, you know, negative energy and negative spirits. And again, never having been formally trained, you know, there's no school for what we do. I had to talk to other psychics and find out, you know, what do you do to protect yourself? So now that I've been able to establish boundaries and guidelines and use protection, it's gotten a lot better for me. You know, if they appear, typically it's like an open session. I'll be thinking in my mind, okay, anybody who wants to talk to me can come in now. You know, it's that type of thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you brought up, actually, the phraseology that you used there was really funny, because I actually had the question written down, have there been any that have scared the bejeebus out of you? So
absolutely. And, you know, I don't know what the terms, you know, technical terms are for them. I know what I would call them because of how I felt when I interacted with them. But there was one instance where I was taken on a road by a group of ghost hunters. And I think it's very imperative that people understand this, too, is that, you know, what we do and ghost hunting, the past several years have become, you know, so popular, and so many people want to ghost hunt and do spirit investigations and call forth spirits and things like that. I really want to stress to people that it's very, very important before you get involved in anything like that to make sure that you really know how to protect yourself, because there are some very negative things out there that you really don't want to mess with, you know, unless you know how to deal with them. Because once you call them forward or they come, it's really not that easy to get rid of them at times, you know. And one experience in particular was a ghost hunting group. I'd gone out to a state park. It was a $10 ghost tour. Really not my thing. I tend to, you know, because I'm gifted, I go and feel what I see by myself. I'm not a big crowd person in that kind of environment. Part of the reason for that is because when there are a lot of people in the room and I'm trying to feel energy, you know, it's the energy gets scattered and you can pick up on the other people's energy in the room, which kind of can throw things off for you, at least for me. So when I do things like that, typically I'd like to go alone or with some trusted friends, you know, now my ghost hunters. But I went to this park and, you know, they said to me afterward, you know, I came down the steps and there was a guy with a name tag and I said to him, do you know what's here? And he looked at me and I said, do you work with this group? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, do you know what's here? And he said, well, why? And I said, well, because I can tell you what's here. I'm sensitive. So we had a little conversation. He brought me over to the group leader. Long story short, they took me out to a very negative place and something followed me home for almost 3 months. And it was a very, very traumatic, scary experience for me because I didn't know how to clear it. And I didn't know how to protect myself. I didn't even know that there were ways to clear it or get rid of it. So once I learned that and got the basis down, honestly, not too much frightens me anymore. I do have an experience that I'm going to go, actually next week, hopefully, to a house where I've had very close interaction with. The mom is what I believe to be possessed. And I very, very sparingly use that term. I would have to say in most of my experiences throughout my lifetime, this has got to be the worst one that way. It's definitely the most powerful negative energy that I've ever felt. But we're going back there next week, hopefully, to do an investigation with an outsider who, because of the fact that I am convinced that this woman is taken, he's going to gather evidence with me and my team, and we're going to send it to a group, actually a pair of demonologists down in New Hampshire who hopefully will be prompted to come up here and help clear this woman because, quite honestly, it's not something that I specialize in, and I don't feel comfortable in trying to clear something that I'm really not sure that I can. And so for the sake of the family, if we're going to do this, I want to do it right, you know, and I want to make sure that we have the people there that specialize in that, that can clear it for her and her family.
Yeah, and you don't want anything attaching to you negatively from it
either. Certainly not to my team because I love them dearly, you know. So, yeah, and it's branched out amongst the family. The energy in the house and on the property has attached itself to other family members. So it really needs to be a thorough, good cleaning of both the grounds, the property, and the people involved. I really want to make sure that we get it right the first time. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I've had some experiences over the years that are very equitable to that as well. When you were talking about the different ghost shows and that sort of thing, a lot of what I see right now is people kind of going from the one extreme to the other. For such a long period of time, it was totally negated. There was nothing to this at all. Ghosts didn't exist. There's nothing at all like it, you know? And so it was deny, deny, deny. Well, now it's sort of the pendulum has swung and it's now hit the other side of things where now it's all about entertainment. And people don't realize that when they're being entertained, they're also being exposed. So you're correct on that, that the people that are doing these type of things really do need to know and understand what type of forces they're tapping into with all of this and what they're exposing themselves and their families to.
Exactly. And it's imperative that they understand that it not just affects them and their families, too. It can come into their home and go to the neighbors,
yes,
you know, or go down the street, wherever it would like. It's a free-form energy, and, you know, they have the ability to travel and go anywhere that they please.
Right, they're just like us. They can do whatever we can do, they can do. They can walk down the road and go to wherever they want to go, so.
Yeah, only they can walk through walls and things that we can't.
Exactly.
You know, so it's important that people really understand how to protect themselves. And I've got to tell you, too, and I know that a lot of people will scoff at this, but I'm going to tell you anyway, tools like the Ouija board, things like that, really are not toys. They're not something to be played with. You can release so much negativity through a Ouija board or a portal that can be so incredibly detrimental. Nothing good, I don't believe, comes out of those things. I believe that if you have a spirit that's positive, that would like to share a message with you, it's going to be loving and gentle, and their energy you're going to feel is for the highest good. You know, those things are just, they're not toys. And I really strongly urge people to not use them. If you're going to get into, you know, investigations or things like that, just, again, you know, make sure that you have the proper tools to protect yourself. Get a hold of me on my Facebook. I'd be more than happy to tell you and teach you how to do that. I'm sure that you would too, Ira. In your experience, you've learned how to protect yourself.
Yep.
It's very, very important, you know, to the process.
A lot of problems that I see, too, is that when you were speaking earlier about not having the knowledge of how to do the clearing and how to keep yourself safe from these things, a lot of, and it's unfortunate, but there are a lot of people that are out there that are fakes. They are there just to make their buck, and that's it. And so they will tell people to do certain things to protect themselves. And it's bull. I mean, it's complete bunk. There's nothing that they're doing that could protect you at all. So you have to really also verify that the advice that you're getting is actually good advice.
That's a very good point. I got to tell you, when I went out to that scary road with that quote unquote ghost group, ghost hunting group, the leader of the group threw some sea salt at me and told me to put it in my pocket. Really? The forces out on that road, one was very much some sort of demon. And believe me, you know, a couple sprinkles of sea salt was not at all what I needed. So yeah, that's a very good point. Make sure that your sources are reputable and that you're following the right guidelines, you know, that you find somebody that you can trust that's well respected in the field. You know, going back to that, the person who had previously done ghost tours at one of the establishments that we're going to be doing ghost tours at now is very popular in my community as a ghost hunter. You know, she's well-renowned and accepted in the community as legitimate. Personally speaking, however, from my experience with her, she's, I hesitate to use the word showboater, but she actually agitates the spirits into coming forth. And I don't believe that that's ever a good way to draw a spirit's attention any more than it is at the checkout line in the supermarket by tugging somebody's sleeve or
Exactly. On
their shoe. You really don't want to piss these guys off.
That's not the kind of attention you want.
You know, I understand that it's for, you know, the sole source of entertainment with the group, and she's getting paid good money to do this, but, you know, it's just not a good way to go about it. I prefer being gentle and being, and that's another thing. There's one of these shows on television that absolutely drives me crazy. The guy is always screaming. And, you know, I watched it, you know, maybe 15 minutes or so of it once or twice, and I had to shut it off because they're not any more hard of hearing than we are. You know, why are you going around the room screaming at them? You know, it's laughable. You know, and everything with a grain of salt. You know, there are a lot of people out there listening tonight that are going to say, you know, she's full of crap. She's not legitimate. And that's okay. You know, I don't have a problem with that. You know, everybody's got their own beliefs and thought processes on things. I just know that I'm here to make a difference. And I know that I'm here to help people. And I know that you are too. And that is really the only thing to me that's important.
That actually brings me to my next question. We've got about 10 minutes left here. Mm-hmm. One thing that I would love to hear from you is if you could get one message out to people, like what is your ultimate message that you would like to people have people walk away from you with? What would be kind of like the one boiled down point that is Maggie?
You know, no one's perfect. Ira, we all make mistakes. No physical being or unphysical being, except for the energy that created all of us, is infallible. I see a lot of people changing the past 10 years. And, you know, my family was raised in the city, New York City and the Bronx and outlying areas, Long Island, Manhattan, You know, and, you know, 20 years ago, you couldn't walk through Central Park at night without taking your life in your own hands. And there was a very good probability if you did, you wouldn't make it out. Greenwich Village, places like that, anywhere in our world. I see huge changes in, you know, now, for instance, because I can speak of that because I have particular knowledge of the city and experience with the city. You know, you go down there to Manhattan now and you walk the streets and, you know, you're lost for directions and you'll ask someone and typically they will take off their mittens and get on their iPhone and find you directions to where you're going, you know, and there's a sense of peace and much more a sense of safety than there was before. And I believe as a whole, you know, we are evolving that way. However, I think it's important to say that there are still a lot of us that are very negative in nature. And I believe that if we all just work together and help each other, whether it be holding the door for someone or carrying an elderly woman's groceries or, you know, just telling someone randomly how nice they look today, anything like that that we can do to boost the energy and to help each other, I think is integral. I think with the governmental changes that are going on, and, you know, they're not subtle changes. These things have been going on for 20, 30 years behind the scenes. You know, there are a lot of things coming to light now that I've seen in my visions and that I know you and I have spoken about privately, that there essentially, I feel, is an ultimate battle here. And it is good versus evil. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, and I've spoken with you privately. In my visions, I see it ending two different ways. And I see it very vividly and with very much detail both of those times. When I ask the angels for guidance and I beg them to tell me, you know, first of all, why are you showing me this? It's like a form of torture to me because you're showing me the utopia and the good ending, and then you're showing me the most disruptive, painful loss of human life end. You know, why are you torturing me with this? Why are you showing me both paths and not showing me what to do to help it or what I can do to change it? The message that I always get from them is, as of yet, it is unwritten. I feel as the pendulum swings, to use your verbiage, that, you know, we are ascending. We are helping each other more, but we need to do more, and we need to do it quicker. And, you know, pay attention to what's around you, too, because as light workers, I found, especially the past 6 months, the people that I've connected with and that I've been drawn to meet by accident, for you, for instance, you know, it's very integral. I feel like the forces behind the scenes, the good ones, are stepping it up, as it were. We're being drawn more toward like-minded people and people that can help each other so that we can get the message out quicker and to more people to just help each other. You know, whether it be community gardening, whether it be, you know, giving a neighbor a hand, shoveling snow, anything that you can do to help each other and you know, just really love your fellow man and disperse the hate that's out there is really what's going to save us, if anything.
That is actually a really good message, and I totally agree with it 100%. I'm all about relationships with people, you know, anything that you can do that is a positive for somebody else offsets all of the negativity that we see around us. And everybody is always so focused on the negative, but they don't realize that for every negative, there is a positive.
The negative thought process creates disease in the body. And the negative thought process spreads as a ripple in a pond, just like the positive does. So why feed the negative if you can help it? And you know, we're all human. Again, I'm sure you wake up cranky. I wake up cranky and I'm in a bad mood and you know what? Give me a little bit to filter it out, but I'll get back to happy. I'll get back to balanced. And we're all like that, you know, but if we focus more on the positive and the blessings that have been given to us, so many of us take for granted the fact that we have roofs over our head and food to eat. You know, just be thankful for what you have and share what you have with others. You know, you can't take it with you when you go, you know?
And you and I have seen definite proof of that right there. What ends up happening a lot with the ones that come to me, for example, talk about how the people that are left behind need to focus more on their relationships. They need to come together. They need to forgive themselves. They never talk about, oh, well, you need to make more money. You need to make this. You need to go out and gather all this stuff together. It's never about that. There's never anything physical to it. It's all about the mental or the karmic attitude of people.
And I've always thought to myself, you know, and I've told you this before, two of my visions, I'm supposed to have a TV show. So all your listeners, if you can hook me up with a host somewhere, a producer somewhere, once it comes to that level, and it will come to fruition, I do believe that, my goal is to use whatever found proceeds I have and the connections that I have to help other people. I think that's so important now. I think a lot of the people in our field, what they do, and again, please understand, I'm not trying to be judgmental in any way. I just see from experience, once they make it to that level, they lose their goal of helping people, you know? And I think that's so important to just stay focused on the fact that we're all here to serve each other and to help each other.
Yeah, they get to the point where they're like, okay, well, I have a secret, but you're not ready for the secret. But if you give me $39.95, I'll be able to tell it to you.
You know, it's just, it's very important to help each other. I mean, we really take for granted what we have. People out there in the streets don't have coats right now. And, you know, if you have an extra coat laying around your closet that you haven't used or that your child's outgrown, you know, give it to somebody. Give it to a shelter or a church or, you know, why are you hanging on to it? You know, I think the world is so materialistic that, you know, we just lose sight of the really, the things that matter. Personal relationships and helping people and, you know, sharing with people. And I have to tell you, too, crime really bothers me. You know, when I see people robbing other people and hurting other people for money or material possessions, it really upsets me. And do I protect what I have? Absolutely, because it's my God-given right to do so and my right in this country to do so as a free citizen. However, that being said, I'd give you the shirt off my back if you asked me for it. Just don't try and steal or take it from me. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I'm the exact same way. And actually, unfortunately, we are actually out of time here. This has been a wonderful conversation, and it has gone so quickly. I really would love to have you back on again anytime.
Tomorrow? No, just
kidding. What means would somebody have to get a hold of you? What contact information would you like to get out? Do you have a website?
Okay, my books are available, I Am Energy and No More Monsters. And I forgot to mention real briefly, my illustrator, Brittany Graham, she studied at Goldsmiths in London. She's absolutely amazing. But my books are available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and Xlibri, Xlibris.com. And they're $15.95, but if you go on those websites, typically they offer deals. They're a couple bucks off right now. And they fluctuate, too. They're like $12.95, $13.95, so that's an awesome deal. I don't have a website right now. I'm very low-key. I have a Facebook page. It's Maggie Violet Nile. That's my business name. So if you type in Maggie and then I think it may be a dash Violet Nile, get a hold of me on my Facebook and friend me, and we can do phone readings. I do lectures. I do group readings. I do ghost investigations. Any number of things. And it's always exciting to meet and talk to new people that are like-minded, too. If you just want to chat, get a hold of me. That'd be awesome.
Well, Maggie, thank you so much for being here tonight. I really appreciate it. This has been a wonderful, wonderful conversation. I was so looking forward to it.
Oh, thank you. I'm really, really happy and pleased and just humbled that you asked me to be a guest on your show. I very much appreciate the opportunity.
Anytime at all. I definitely am going to have you back on again.
Well, thank you.
There was so much more that we needed to go through.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, thank you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So, guys, I hope that you enjoyed listening to that interview as much as I enjoyed doing it. Maggie's always a fun person to talk to, and I'm definitely going to have her come back on again. I'm sorry again about the audio quality of it. There really wasn't much that could be done about it. It was a problem on her end with her computer, and it should be resolved by next time we do an interview with her. if you want to go to the show notes for this show, which will also be the archive version of this show, you can go to openeyesnetwork.com/OE056. I'll also have there the link to the video showing the proof that this whole Paris thing is a false flag operation. And it has been so from the get-go. On Monday, in fact, I'm going to delve much deeper into this whole false flag stuff that's going on with Paris, with the past, with other things that have gone on. And we're going to really get deeply involved in it because there is so much that's going on with this. It is craziness, and people really need to see what's happening with it. So as things develop over the weekend, I'm sure there will be new things that will be needing to be talked about. And again, that'll be on Monday, January 12th. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. If you are looking for us on Facebook and Twitter, you can go to Open Eyes Network on both of those platforms. On scene.is, we are at Ira Robinson. And guys, be sure to stick around. Michael Vera will be broadcasting Late Night in the Midlands in just a few minutes. It's going to be a good episode. And until next time, keep safe out there and have fun. And thank you so much for listening. Remember, tune in on Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, latenightinthemidlands.com for Open Eyes.